The Guardian.
Hello all, James Richardson here, and before we get started with today's edition of Football Weekly, I'm going to point you in the direction of our sponsor Squarespace. For more about building beautiful websites, go to squarespace.com. And now, on with the show. Football Weekly Extra. Today, midweek madness. Foxes stay topsies while Arsene fox it up again. Meantime, it's San Antonio v Spurs as Mikel Antonio gets the winner against Tottenham for West Ham. And while Man City get beaten, now risk losing top four, Pep's Bayern Munich also lose to dangerous mites. It's almost like announcing managerial changes 6 months early might not be a good thing. Anyway, we round up all the big news home and abroad and take a big, big look forward to the weekend's action. Let's hear Honigstein, your Championship Minute, and all your favourite bits in this Football Weekly Extra. Hey, on board today with a lot to talk about, John Ashdown.
Hi there.
Hi, John. Greg Bukowski.
Hi, James.
All right there. And Barry Glendinning.
Hello.
All right?
Yep.
Good stuff. Midweek madness. When Leicester drew with West Brom Tuesday night, who'd have thought the next three teams would all lose? Did you think that, Barry?
No, I didn't. Each game in isolation was a surprise, and the three of them together is just bizarre.
One of them perhaps less of a surprise. We'll come on to that in a second.
It's kind of like one of those MGM productions, you know, the big number at the end where you've got Arsenal and City and Tottenham in the... I'm so used to them not being there. In the chorus line, raising, you know, whoever, Ginger Rogers or Lucille Ball aloft in the form of Leicester. You know, you have it. We want you to have it. I mean, none of them have done their chances irreparable harm, because the only team that gained an advantage was Leicester, who got another point ahead. But none of them have done their chances a great deal of good either.
Well, that's true. Valderez tweeting, I didn't realise it was March until I saw Arsenal choking. Doesn't time fly by? Is it those two now? Is it Foxes and Spurs?
No, I don't think so.
No? Arsenal now 6 points behind. They're surely battling, John, for top four. And then you've got this extraordinary clash between Man City and Man United, who are level now on points, with Man City just ahead, with West Ham only a point behind.
Yeah, you definitely can't rule West Ham out of that tussle, given the result the other night. But I think, you know, particularly given the North London derby coming up at the weekend, you know, Arsenal win that and it's, you know, they're right back in it, aren't they?
I mean, none of them are particularly worse off than they were on, say, Monday, and we weren't ruling out any of their chances.
No, that's true. That is very true.
But you still look at Leicester's run of fixtures that they've got to come, and it still looks more favourable than the teams around them as well. So, you know, they've got Watford away next. Watford were doing particularly well, you know, a while back. Maybe not as intimidating these days. They've got Newcastle at home then. Crystal Palace away. Crystal Palace out of form. Southampton at home. So, I really think that was an opportunity for the other sides to, you know, to keep pace with them. I mean, Man City had just done a sound check at Wembley for their match against Liverpool and then kind of come up with some horrific notes on Wednesday night. And if you look at Spurs as well, I mean, I actually think Spurs, a lot of people are saying that they, you know, they've choked again there, but they've just won six on the bounce before that game. Yeah. So I think you can forgive them against a very physical West Ham side who, you know, are talented as well. But they are a team that are as good at doing what Spurs are, you know, themselves. They're very good at out-battling and out-running opponents.
What about Leicester, though? Surely they are slowing down a bit. They got beaten by Arsenal. They squeaked past Norwich. They drew at home to West Brom. You know, if that was another of the title challenges, you'd go, well, they're really just creaking along.
Well, I think one of their most significant results was the draw at Aston Villa. People have said that their run-in it looks easy on paper. It's not the case. Those are going to be tough games, and I'm not so sure they're as well equipped to deal with those kinds of teams as they are dealing with the better teams, you know, who come at them and attack them. But time will tell, you know, and the way things are going, they're doing fine. They're passing every test pretty much, and you can't really criticise them at all, but that does, to me, seem to be their Achilles heel, if they have one.
Right. Well, it was a fascinating performance on Tuesday against a West Brom team that then took an early lead, which enabled them to be even more West Brom than usual. Although Tony Peters did go with Sessegnon and Berahino and Rondon as well. So yeah, it was a lot more interesting than you might have expected. But anyway, they may get more good news, as you say, from the weekend's London derby, which sees an Arsenal team fresh from defeat by Swansea at home visiting...
Second-string Swansea, who made six changes, basically going into the game in the belief, well, we're going to lose this one, so let's just keep our players for the more winnable games. They went behind. You know, Arsenal couldn't have been in a better position in the game and still managed to lose. It's incredible, really.
They didn't have a manager either. He was in hospital. So.
Although Alan Curtis is getting loads of praise for the way that he 20 minutes in, he changed... The formation and then stuck Sigurdsson on and really went for the win, which they got. I mean, the Gunners, extenuating circumstances, the fact that they kept hitting the frame of the goal. Were they unlucky, Greg?
You could say they were unlucky. I don't know if they're unlucky. I mean, Giroud hit the bar when I still think he should have hit the target there. You know, not particularly unlucky if you can't hit the target. I just wondered it. I mean, it's been said before, it seems to have the psychological issues. I don't know. There's just something about that Arsenal side that just doesn't make their own fans believe. I mean, the amount of criticism that Wenger received after the defeat at Manchester United, I don't know. It just seeps through from the stands into the players, and they start to hide when they need to. You know, they need to show themselves.
It's a win for Swansea, you should say. That does that lift them out of the relegation picture? I mean, not definitively, but it's a massive boost for them in their battle against the drop, no?
They're 6 points clear now of the bottom three. I mean, I can't see Swansea getting dragged back into it. And also, I think they are, you know, they're playing decent football for the team that are down at the bottom. And they seem to have a little bit more optimism, which I think is what you need, like Leicester showed last season. If you can actually attack relegation rather than go into it with fear, then it bodes well, and that's what Swansea are doing.
Yeah, but Arsenal, as you say, we must react to this defeat was Wenger's message last time after Sunday. And I doubt what he meant was losing at home to a side that had picked up just two wins in its previous 10 matches.
Yeah, and it's not... The thing is with Arsenal as well, it's not a one-off, you know, in terms of obviously
the third straight defeat
seasons. Though. Well, they've not been great since sort of the turn of the year. You know, if you look at sort of the form table since Christmas, they're sort of bottom half. And so a couple of setbacks have been coming, really. That's the more worrying thing. If I was an Arsenal fan, I'd be sort of... That's just been the whole sort of direction of the season and the tone of the season since Christmas, really.
Sorry, Ben.
I was just going to say, I said on Monday that Arsenal are doing what they always do, the same number of points as they have, you know, every season at this stage. But Jonathan Wilson wrote about them this morning, made the point that they're actually a point better off this season.
Really?
But I think it probably can't be easy for the players playing in that toxic atmosphere at the Emirates. But I would argue that if more of their players had the same sense of entitlement that all their fans seem to have, then they possibly be a lot better equipped to win the league.
Well, the fans may be entitled to be entitled, given the amount of money they've paid to...
Yeah, and I mean, there's reports released. Arsenal have, I think, 180 million cash reserves in the bank. Obviously, not all of that is available for transfers, but, you know, at least half of it is. And the ongoing reluctance to spend. I mean, Olivier Giroud is a decent striker. I don't think he's anything great, but you know, he's not a title winning striker maybe, but he's in a horrible run of form. It's really not working out with Theo Walcott, and the lack of goals could be what does for them, you know.
I was just going to ask, there are a lot of empty seats at the start of this game, which for a side involved in the title challenge seemed a bit surprising. Were there transport issues, do you know, or are people just not turning up now for Arsenal?
I don't know. I saw that myself, and I wasn't sure. I mean, it did seem to fill up a little bit as it went on. Perhaps transport issues were there, but that can't really make the players feel like there's, you know, there's unity amongst them, but the fans and themselves when they go into a game. I just think, look down Arsenal's spine of the team. You just check, but who are the other players in that spine who are going to be there, you know, for the long term? I don't know. When they play well, the players they rely on are those who, by their nature, are a bit flighty because of the positions they play in, such as Ozil and Sanchez, who was, you know, a sure thing until his battery ran out maybe a few weeks ago. I think now there's... they just need more reliable players in key positions.
There's a couple of bits of classic Arsenal. There's one was on the Routledge's equaliser when Mertesacker was basically just statuesque. If you're that slow, why you would wander that far up? And then he just sort of turned and watched the whole game developing around him.
I forget who it was in. It was a dreadful touch from somebody, I think, that allowed them to counter-attack like they did. But you are right, I think Mertesacker was still taking his third step forwards before he realised the ball was in the back of the net.
The other thing was then Pedacek going up that last-ditch attempt to try and get an equaliser and pulling a muscle, and he's now out for the North London derby. Yeah.
Yeah, so it'll be Ospina will come in for him. Hmm. You know, which is not the end of the world. Ospina's... He's played in goal before. He knows what he's doing, you know.
Well...
He's not as good as Cech, but I think they have more pressing issues than the absence of Petr Cech.
Right. Oh, you know, possibly so. Possibly so. Anyway, off they go to Spurs. Well, they do actually have a reasonably decent record. 14 meetings in the last 6 years between these two sides in League and Cup. Spurs only had 4 wins in there, and they've had some heavy defeats as well. And Spurs themselves coming off this defeat away at Upton Park on, what time was that? Was that Wednesday?
Yes,
it was. Courtesy of the mighty Mikel Antonio. Hey, should just mention Dave Hagerman says, I feel compelled to point out that Mikel Antonio's homage to Homer was itself a homage to the late, great Curly Howard out of the Three Stooges, isn't it?
Really impressed by West Ham.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Why, Greg?
Really? Well, they've had such a bad run with injuries throughout most of the season. In December... they were decimated. They went six Premier League games without winning. But in that time, I think they drew 5 of those and just didn't concede hardly any goals. And Bilic seems to have this ability, a bit like Diego Simeone almost, to get the best out of his team when they're the underdogs. And they're a really hard-working side. They've got a few, you know, very talented players amongst them, but particularly Payet. But I mean, they're being propelled along by a £7 million signing from the Championship and in Mikel Antonio, who's come to the fore. And I think you'd probably say there's three teams in the Premier League, Leicester, Tottenham, and West Ham, who have is palpable team spirit. It's obvious that they believe in what they're doing, they believe in what the manager's telling them. And there aren't many others who seem to be like that in the league. Maybe Stoke and Mark Hughes as well, but he's still working with what he's got. I think West Ham have just been very, very impressive. And if it wasn't for Leicester, they would be the surprise package that everybody was talking about this year.
Bilic has something about him. I think if I was a player and he was my manager, I'd go through the wall for him, like absolutely no problem. Probably Ranieri as well for different reasons. And I think, not so much Wenger, not so much Pellegrini. You know, I don't know these guys very well. I don't know them at all. But, Bilic, definitely, he had something about him.
You get the sense that if Bilic asked you to run through the wall, he'd be saying, run through the wall, because or I'm going to get you. And with Ranieri, he'd be sort of, please run through the wall. There's if you don't, I'll cry, yeah. I'll cry if you don't. Yeah.
And Wenger?
Finger, I don't know what he'd.
Right.
You wouldn't. Well, he'd just. I don't know. No.
Don't probably want you wall. To just to pass your way around the. Or he'd show you where the door in the wall is.
Right.
You know, hand you a key.
And you'd fumble around with it, unable to put it into the lock.
Right. Maybe you just pass the key between yourselves.
Yes. Yeah.
And then the moment would pass, much like the moment has passed for that analogy. a lot of people. Hailing Bilic's decision to go with 5 at the back to counter the threat of Spurs' rampaging fullbacks. Did Kane and Co just have an off night, do you think?
They came into it in the second half, Spurs, but yeah, I think they've been very impressive at the back for much of the season, West Ham, and they kept the back door shut, and Spurs didn't play as well as they can do. I don't think we need to read into that too much. I think they will have good days again, and they're still very much in there in the title race.
3 points? 3 points between them and Leicester. Mm. Arsenal another 3 points behind. Last time the two teams met at White Hart Lane was in the League Cup, actually, and Arsenal won with 2 goals from Flamini. What's your feeling, John? Is this the biggest North London derby you can remember?
My memory's terrible. Is it? I struggle to remember things. People may have noticed that.
Right.
Yeah. I think it's the beer. I think the 500 beer challenge has tipped me over the edge of forgetfulness. Like there's too many brain cells have been destroyed. Okay. There must have been bigger North London derbies.
Should I go to someone else with this?
Yes, please. Yeah.
All right, Greg.
It's a very big North London.
It's certainly among them, isn't it?
I think the thing to look at this, you look at the league table, and Arsenal shouldn't be out of it if they lose. In any other season, you wouldn't think they would be, but this season, everybody's just going on feeling about teams. I mean, United have been written off this season many times, and yet statistically, they're there joint fourth in Man City. People gave them Bob Hope of getting in the Champions League 2 weeks ago, and they're there. And so, who knows? I mean, it may be just because of the fact that Arsenal's fans seem so miffed again and there's so much pressure swirling around them, it might be them done psychologically if they lose to Spurs, if not in terms of points. But yeah, this would be a huge result for Arsenal if they could beat Spurs and perhaps would be enough to get fans back on side.
Right. Do you see that? Do you see any chance of that happening?
No. Now, I think it may be looking at a draw. It may be that Arsenal go into this with renewed defensive vigour and try and get a point out of it and not lose and do any more damage.
All right. Let's take a break there, friends, because coming up, we've got important chats about Mancunian things.
Hello, listeners. Producer Ben here with details of an offer from Cornerstone, the official shaving partner of Football Weekly. You all know that shopping for razor blades is dull, as are the final shaves from the last razor in your pack. So why not save yourself time and money and get a closer shave than ever before with an uber-sharp, uber-smart German-engineered razor of the year from Cornerstone. Just visit cornerstone.co.uk/guardian, enter your initials, pick the delivery scheme that suits you best, and your shaving products will be delivered right to your door. Because you listen to Football Weekly, Cornerstone are giving you £10 of your first delivery. And what's more, if you're not 100% satisfied, they'll give a full refund with absolutely no questions asked. So head to cornerstone.co.uk/guardian to pick up a personally engraved heavy-duty handle and 6 award-winning blades from just 4 of your English pounds. That's cornerstone.co.uk/guardian.
Shaving listeners. And hey, John, am I right in thinking you're going to shave your entire head this weekend?
Possibly. I was going to do it during my time off.
Okay, when's that?
I had a week off last week.
Right.
But just because I think I look a bit scary when I've got a fully...
You wait till you've shaved your head.
Yeah.
I don't think it's a good look.
Well, it's just I'm a bit irritated with my, patches.
It's pretty short to begin with, isn't it? That must be like a number one at the side, isn't it?
Yeah. But it grows fast, but it grows sparsely, like a poorly rabbit.
My take on this, and I have some experience in this matter, is that if you don't have a tan, a completely shaven head, and I'm including like facial hair, it just looks wrong.
Right.
Yeah. Now.
But still, I imagine that the razors that were
those razors.
I bet
if you were,
if you were
do
going
it,
to,
yeah, that would certainly be an option.
Cornerstone.
There you go.
I've always thought tattoos look a bit manky on white people if they don't have tan.
Oh, yeah, fair point. Coloured floral shirts, that's another one. Anyway, the race for fourth.
Oh, yeah.
You know, given that, say, Leicester, Spurs and West Ham are going to be in the top four this year, that means that the big clubs have now got only one teeny place to fight over. Wow. Arsenal, talked about them. The two Manchester sides, as you mentioned, Greg, level on points. How many points are they back off the title thing? Oh, yeah, 10 points off the title.
That just seems extraordinary because Manchester United have been a laughing stock for pretty much the whole of the season. And there they are, level on points with Man City and looking good for a top four spot.
Yeah, roaring away in Europa League as well. Yeah. Johnny S says, has anyone considered that Man United's return to form over the past week is due not to Louis van Gaal's brilliance, but to McClair and Butt? Basically, the necessity of Louis van Gaal bringing in players who he hadn't numbed into mediocrity with his coaching philosophy has suddenly made the team look like Man United again. Is that fair? Or has there's been a bit of a perestroika in terms of his kind of previously harsh footballing philosophy, no?
Yeah, I think that's... I think you bring in younger players and it does make a difference to the kind of the psychology of the fans, and it can bring an injection to the team. That said, no. I mean, Watford should have beaten Manchester United last night, really. Yeah. I mean, they had so many chances that they blew.
But it was a 1-0 win for United with a Mata free kick.
Yeah, a lovely free kick as well.
Marcus Rashford found out for the Charlotte New Year's.
What happened there?
He didn't score.
Oh, yeah.
He's in a goal drought.
He's in a slump.
Another youngster on the scrap heap.
I wonder if there's a bit of a devil may care attitude about Van Gaal with the youngsters. That
hey, did you see when he fell over the other day? I laughed so much. He's a clown, that guy.
I know. Well, yeah, that was maybe part of his act. You know, I don't care anymore. I'm just going to throw myself down on the touchline, throw these teenagers in, and see what they can do, because he must have felt like he's been on the brink so often that he's like, well, I may not be here in the summer anyway, let's just do what they want, so they want me to do.
You're saying he's D-mob happy?
Possibly.
Could be.
Could go out in a blaze of semi-glory.
Right.
He's also been doing it all season, he's played younger players, throughout the campaign, giving them debuts, but a lot of them been sort of further down the pitch. So,
we had the stat on Monday, and that was several days ago, so I can't remember what it was now, but it was the number of academy players
14,
he's debuted to. Thanks,
14.
Yeah. Right,
but if they continue on this upward trajectory, is it possible that he'd still be in charge next season?
Well,
and if so,
question,
what would Manchester United fans make of that?
I don't know. And anyway, if D-Mob Happy makes him play expressive, free-flowing football and get results, how come it's having quite the opposite effect at Man City? Where, as you mentioned, Greg, they absolutely... Well, I mean, what happened at Anfield on Wednesday night?
Well, what happened was what's happened in the league against Liverpool in the last three games, where even going back to last season at Anfield, if Liverpool play, or any team plays with energy against Manchester City, the midfield doesn't seem able to handle it, and you can win back possession off them far too easily and cause them too many problems. I think you look into the Wembley game where... I think Liverpool weren't helped by the fact that Sturridge got a bit frustrated and started dropping really deep to get the ball and getting in the way of the other players who were supposed to create. I think Origi was really important for Liverpool last night because he held the line. He actually pushed up against the two centre-backs and gave Lallana, Milner and Firmino the space to create, and they were fantastic. But I just think Fernando, Fernandinho, I know Torre wasn't starting, but I think they've got an average age of 30 and they haven't got an awful lot of energy about them, and they think they really could have done with Delph being more fit this season to add a bit of spikiness in there and a bit of energy against these midfields that they've come up against who have just outrun them and outfought them.
Yeah. And that's 2 wins in 9 away for Man City.
Yeah. They play in moments. They can be so slick in one moment, and then that's it, and you don't see them for a while, and you can suppress those moments very easily.
But from a Liverpool point of view, really impressive stuff, even though Klopp couldn't seem to believe how easy it was going. Yeah. Ben Whitfield says, is everyone aware that Liverpool have only conceded one goal in their last 5 games? And it wasn't a header. It was a Mignolet mistake, though.
Mm. You don't want to get too excited about Liverpool at times, because we've seen this before in the season where they have a really great performance and they don't follow it up. They've won, the best run all season is two in the league, it's 2 wins in a row, and that's what they're on at the moment. If they beat Palace and win 3 games in a row, that is the best run all season. That's how inconsistent Liverpool have been. Wow. So I think that's Klopp's biggest challenge, to get that kind of performance out of his team more often. I mean, if not as energetic, at least the basic level of work rate to play that kind of football. And I think the centre forward is key to that, because if that centre forward stays in position more often, you give those three players behind him a lot more space to do the damage.
Right, fair enough. Liverpool taking on Crystal Palace this weekend, a Crystal Palace side who haven't won since 1860-something.
Right? Liverpool haven't won at Palace since 1860-something.
Is that right?
It's actually in the league, they haven't beat Palace since 1997, when Øyvind Leonardsen was on the score sheet. So,
yeah.
So it's not a happy hunting ground for Liverpool. So that is a really big test of whether they can show some kind of consistency. They won in the FA Cup a couple of seasons ago, but that was it.
Okay, we might have a word or two more about Palace later on, of a Pardew nature. But right now, let me just say, so this weekend, those three teams that are there or thereabouts as regards the top four, City, Man United and West Ham, a point behind the two Mancunians. West Ham are at Everton. Villa visit Man City. Man United head off to the Hawthorns against this spunky new West Brom side that Tony Pulis has decided to unleash upon the Premier League. I think they've got the toughest fixture there, haven't they?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
West Brom have only lost two of the last 10, I think.
Is that right?
Yeah. So they're a Chris Brunt down, though, because he's done his knee, and tragically for him, he's going to miss the Euros with Northern Ireland, which is an awful shame. But that's life, I suppose. These things happen.
Yeah, that's true.
Ian McIntosh, he had a great interview, actually, with Tony Pulis.
Yes.
I think it's on the ESPN website. So, we learnt a lot about Tony.
Tony's a lovely and charming individual.
He is,
away from
very
the
nice. My dealings with him have been limited, but yeah, seems a good guy. He gets up early and goes to the gym and then has two breakfasts, porridge and fruit, followed by boiled eggs and soldiers.
Every day?
I don't know, he did that day anyway.
Oh, I see.
That might have been just all front to impress McIntosh, though. Maybe his usual morning routine is, you know, lying in bed till 11:30 and then having a fag and a cup of coffee. I don't know. But he is a very fit, physically fit man, Mr. Pulis, so I suspect he is no stranger to the gym. But, Macca was sort of asking him, tell us your secret, Tony. And he was quite upfront about the fact that, you know, he's aware that the teams he manages are limited and they go into games against teams that have the tools, as he said, to beat them in most departments. So it's organisation, hard work, and when you have a team that's limited, your job is to get results rather than play attractive, aesthetically pleasing football. But
although that's slightly given the lie to by the way that right now he's fielding these three together, that West Brom are kind of playing attractive football.
Yeah, well,
you could argue he's not being done any favours by the fact that the league's been so inconsistent this year, because perhaps West Brom fans have seen what other teams who haven't traditionally done that well improve and therefore expect more from their own team, when in the reality is the 13th, and perhaps that's the beginning of the season is where they should have been.
I suppose you're right. Anyway, who do you think is going to do those three? Actually, City, Villa, and Man United away at West Brom, and West Ham at Everton. Everton, who just coasted to a 3-1 win over Villa and have received a large amount of money from the Iranian British-Iranian businessman who's just bought 49.9% of the club. What do you think? Who's going to come out? Who's going to be the team in fourth at the end of all of this?
This is a. I think the Everton game is a massive test for West Ham. In I think West Ham haven't beaten Everton in God knows how many years at Goodison Park. They're not a team that they ever play particularly well against. But Everton's. They've scored loads of goals recently, but speaking to Evertonians, I know they're still really unhappy with how they go about the defending. So I could see West Ham maybe putting an end to that, that record.
Do you think with this new direction for Everton, how much chance do you think is there of Martinez being the man that they pin their hopes on? If they do start spending big and that during the summer,
I think he'll remain for another season and. And perhaps they'll stick it out with him and see whether he can build a defence. I mean, it's odd. You look at them as an attacking team. They're so attractive, and he's developed players, you know, that other managers maybe wouldn't have been able to a level that they're now getting a lot of interest from other clubs. He could, you know, I don't think Mashiri's going to put Everton, you know, into the really, really, really big spending bracket. And also there's TV money around next year, so other clubs will be able to spend money just as well. The issue Everton have had, and I don't think it is an issue, is they seem hell-bent on wanting to build a new stadium. And
you don't think it's an issue? You don't think they need one?
Well, I just don't understand. Goodison Park kind of needs updating. It's one of the older grounds. Just from my own personal point of view, I think it's a lovely old ground, and it's part of what makes Everton great and gives them the character. But we were being told the other week that the ticket prices don't matter anymore because TV money's there. So if you add another 10,000 seats and build a new stadium at an incredible cost, what's the point? Like, until the TV money dries up, maybe stadiums... won't matter. So maybe update Goodison or something, but don't try and build a new ground. Look at Spurs, they're building a new ground and they're moaning about it because it's going to limit them financially, they're saying. Well, don't build a new ground, just have the TV money and build a really good squad and team, which is what they're doing at the moment. And, you know, I feel like they're maybe going to rip it all up when they kind of say they can't buy any players because they've got this new stadium to build it.
Yeah, and they have to go and play loads of games at Lord knows where in the meantime.
So...
clubs, eh? What are they like? Yeah. Let's talk about teams down the bottom. There's some big games coming up here. There have been some big games midweek. Newcastle taking on Bournemouth. Wow, big win for Bournemouth against Southampton. Newcastle's result, not so good. They had, 18 days off? And that's what they came up with.
And then McLaren moaned about it afterwards and said that they deserved more. And Butland had an incredible game. But I think he was thinking about the game Butland had against Newcastle last time round. I think he made a really good save.
He made one good save, wasn't it?
Yeah, but it wasn't like he was kind of plucking the ball out of the air and knocking it over.
It wasn't like Ben Foster, who did have an amazing game for West Brom against Leicester. Anyway. Yeah. Mike Morgy says, how many more positive spins does Steve McLaren have left in his locker?
I don't know. it looks like we might find out. But they're a mess, Newcastle. And it's not working for them there.
They could be in real trouble. That stat about their away record, they've scored only 7 goals away, which was and must therefore still be the worst record in any of the top 4 divisions, possibly further than that now, of English football. And they've got a rotten run of games coming up. They're away to Leicester next. Then, I think, at home to Sunderland, which is not a game that they've done well in.
But they've lost 6 in a row.
6 in a row, yeah. Yeah. Ooh, 7 if you include that 6-0 that they lost behind closed doors. Did that actually happen? I mean, I'm not asking in a philosophical sense.
I don't know. But there was
this story that over Christmas, I think, just to keep their end in, or... Yeah.
Well, they just threw in a timely derby.
Supposedly, yeah. Producer Ben says it did happen. Anyway.
But it's getting pretty late in the day, isn't it, for Newcastle, if they are going to make a change.
I mean, they've got a game in hand. Oh, sorry, yeah.
You know, how many games are left? 11 games left for them. It is fine. Although Sunderland did sack Gus Poyet last season with 9 games left. And I suppose it worked out for them.
They brought in Dick Advocate, who's available. So,
well, yeah. It'd be an interesting move.
It would be, wouldn't it? Yeah, it does seem like if they were going to make the change, that maybe before this break rather than after it would have been the time.
And the last time they went down, they sacked... Who was the manager of the last bit? Well, they sacked whoever their manager was.
Alan Shearer took them down last
time. Yeah, and Shearer ended up taking them down with, you know, by managing sort of the last half dozen games at the end of the season.
Alan Shearer, by the way, congratulations to him, who I learnt today is up for RTS award as top sports pundit. Just let that sink in for a second. Right.
To be fair, yes. I think he's got a lot better.
I'd agree with you, Barry, but... So that's why I was there this morning.
Who's the shortlist?
It's Gary Neville, Alan Shearer, and I can't remember because after that I fainted, basically, so I missed the third name.
Sav?
No, it's not Sav. It's somebody probably not football because it's just a general sports pundit. Right. And when they came up with Alan Shearer, I was just astonished. But anyway, that's all by the by. Well, anyway, they're going to be hosting Bournemouth, who, as I say, looked impressive against... Southampton. Well, last time they met, there was an astonishing goal. Was it Bournemouth had like about a billion shots and then couldn't score? And Newcastle sneaked a 1-0 win.
Yes, Newcastle had one shot in the entire match and scored with it, I think, just before the first half, or just before half time.
Right. Well, anyway, that's a big game. They need to start winning and fast. That's the message for Newcastle. Bournemouth, their win has given them a little bit of breathing space. 8 points clear now of the drop below them. Swansea, mentioned them already, who are going to be hosting Norwich. Now, Swansea are 6 points clear of the drop. Norwich have dropped into the bottom three now. They got beaten 2-1 by Chelsea as their policy of hemorrhaging goals left, right and centre continues, Barry.
Yeah, well, they're conceding about 3 goals a game at the moment. Their results have gone off a cliff. They've had some bad luck, but some of their defending is awful. I was writing about them the other day and I checked that interestingly, they were among the bigger spenders during the January transfer window, but their form has plummeted since January. Mm. And going on the fixtures they had played, the corresponding fixtures from before Christmas, they took 9 points, whereas they've taken 1 from against the same teams.
Wow.
Since January. So they're in desperate trouble and plummeting, and look as if they will probably have to rely on, you know, the awfulness of 3 other teams to stay up rather than pulling themselves up by their own bootstraps.
Right.
But they have some easy on-paper fixtures coming up in the run-in, and they also have to play several other relegation contenders. So if Alex Neil can turn things around, they ought to be fine, but at the moment there is no indication that he can turn things around.
Tetty's going to be missing apparently this weekend. He always seems to be missing.
No Tetty, no party.
Well, absolutely. Wise words. Saints, meantime, are taking on Sunderland. Now, Sunderland, that 2-2 draw with Crystal Palace, a thrilling finale, that point enough to take them above Norwich. Oh, no, level with Norwich, but above them on goal difference. Was quite. Were you across that, Barry? It was a thrilling end.
I'm actually going to the Southampton-Sunderland game.
Right.
But I said on Monday, Conor Wickham, scores in bursts, and he pops up with 2 more for Palace in that game. Points probably fair enough, but it is quite a damning indictment on Sunderland that they're one place above the relegation zone, level on points with the team below them, and that's far from the most troubling thing they have to worry about at the moment.
Well, Gary Viva's saying, do Sunderland have a lot to answer for with the Johnson fallout? This Adam Johnson, former star, who's due to be sentenced for basically underage... how do you want to put this politely?
Well, he molested an underage girl and groomed her, and he's looking at 5 to 10 years in jail. And his career is over, and he's lost his girlfriend, and his life's fallen apart. Although it's obviously not all about him, because there was this girl involved as well. But yeah, Sunderland do have questions to answer. Louise Taylor listed them, among other, all the Northeastern football correspondents, among other people. Also from child protection agencies have said they've questioned. And the main question being that Adam Johnson said in court that he privately made Sunderland CEO Margaret Byrne aware of the fact that, yes, he had groomed this girl and he had kissed her, and they continued to let him play on their team. They issued a big, long statement yesterday. It was very carefully worded and it didn't address this matter at all. So basically what people need to know is, did Margaret Byrne and other people at the club know that he had done this, and if so, why did they let him represent the team? Not saying he should have been sacked, just saying he shouldn't have been allowed to represent the club. And don't forget, this girl was a season ticket holder at the club, went to every game, and surely they had a duty of care to her as well as their employee.
Well, it's a very sad business. They suspended him when he was first charged, then allowed him to come back into the team and keep playing, despite the fact that, as he says in court, that he'd told them of what had actually happened. Anyway, right. The other game we haven't mentioned Chelsea-Stoke. Chelsea, the team who beat Norwich, and still unbeaten in the league under Gus Hiddink.
Ten games unbeaten now. That's 3 on the spin in the league, which is the best form all season. However, they're coming up against a informed Stoke team. They've won 3 of them on the bounce themselves. It's a difficult one to predict. I mean, I'd say Chelsea should be favourites because they're at home, but they've also got a tie against PSG, the second leg.
Yeah. Is there any reason that either team should really care about this game? There's not a huge amount riding on it, is there?
Well, that's the issue that Chelsea might have in that. If Hiddink's being selfish for his own personal glory, the cups are the thing that he wants to focus on.
Well, I think Chelsea themselves would probably feel that too.
Yeah, although you look at the table again and they're up to 10th now.
Yeah.
They're only 3 points off 7th. That would put them, not far behind West Ham. And we're talking about West Ham as being a serious Champions League title contender.
They're 3 points off 7th. But they're they're 7 points behind West Ham. It's not insurmountable.
It's not insurmountable.
And for a team that doesn't lose.
Well, if you look at their form, the form stands out completely in mid-table against all the other teams around them and is comparable to anybody in the league at the moment. So there's still, there's still a very intriguing team in the league, perhaps. And if they have a little run of games, who's to say they can't come steaming in?
Not me, Greg.
Like Zola Budd.
Exactly. Just like her. Pat O'Neill.
Who would be the Mary Decker, the elbow off the track and trip up?
Perhaps was Mary Decker known for being quite, physical herself?
Well, she was quite physically attractive.
Okay. Yes. Oh, well, Stoke then.
Right, that'll be it.
She married Mr. Slaney.
Who?
Mary Decker married somebody called Slaney.
Oh, because she became Decker Slaney.
Shame she didn't marry Roger Black.
There you go, Black and Decker. Or somebody called Double.
Yeah, Steve Double.
Steve Double.
We're still talking about attractive things, because, by the way, Imbula has been very attractive in Stoke's midfield.
Brilliant. Yeah, brilliant, Craig.
Quality attractive.
All right. I want to talk about attractive Pato, because he's got a new moustache. So that wasn't, a waste of a signing by any means. Right, if you thought all that was exciting, listeners, just wait till you hear what we have for you after this.
Shooby-dooby-doo-wop, Squarespace. Wum-bum-ba-dum, Squarespace. Looby-dooby-dooby, Squarespace. Ba-da-ba-da-ba-da, Squarespace.
Hey, listeners, if you think that Barry, Greg and John sound great together, just wait till you see them together. I say just wait, and that's if you've got a ticket. I think there's 30 left. To our Liverpool show, which is happening on the 12th of May. Isn't that right, Greg, at the Epstein Theatre?
It is at the Epstein Theatre, which used to be the Neptune Theatre, in case people don't know where it is.
Right, until they decided that it would be an appropriate way to remember Brian Epstein, manager of a team, of an exciting quartet known as the Beatles.
Mm.
Right, that's enough of that, because now it's time for Raphael Honigstein. Are you there, Rafa?
I am. Hello, James.
Great. Hello to you. Wow. This has turned into quite a week, hasn't it?
It has. We should have Englische Woche much more often in the Bundesliga.
Yeah, exactly. An Englische Woche, by the way, is what they term a midweek round, because they think that's how the English live their lives, playing midweek football all the time. So when they have that in Germany, they call it an Englische Woche. Now, here's Robert H. saying, there were the lads Jimbo, Barry and Honigstein writing off Dortmund's Bundesliga chances on Monday! And hashtag he's put in here, Mainz. Yes. Why, Rafa? What's he talking about?
I don't know. I wasn't there on Monday. But I presume that he is referring to the fact that nobody really in Germany, including a lot of non-German-based experts, believe that this was really a title race, with Bayern being 8 points clear. However, latest results indicate that it's only 5 points. And, of course, Dortmund have a chance to cut this down to two.
2 points.
When they host Bayern on Saturday. So it is all very much on, as they say.
OK, so Bayern lose at home to Mainz on Wednesday night. And now they have to go and visit Borussia, who are just, 5 points behind them, at the weekend on Saturday. That's so very, very exciting. Is there a bit of a thread? I mean, we saw them throw away a 2-0 lead away to Juventus in the Champions League. They've got major absentees at the back, and maybe not looking convincing for that sort of reason. Is there as well a kind of pep factor in all of this?
Well, Pep's done really well against Dortmund in all his games. So he thinks that there is a Tuchel factor, in as much that Dortmund are just a much more difficult side to play against this year. I mean, their run has been absolutely unbelievable. the only reason why people haven't talked about it much more is because Bayern have been themselves quite invincible. And I think it is seen as a suddenly a very big game, and a game that Bayern will find very hard to play for the reasons that you just mentioned, with their problems at the back, but also with Juventus coming up. You're beginning to sense that there is possibly a repeat on the cards. Bayern have, in all seasons under Guardiola, struggled to keep up the intensity in the second half of the season when their title was more or less confirmed, and their eye was very much on the Champions League. And the problem for them is that this time round, that sort of slackening up might actually be punished by a Dortmund side that play wonderful stuff.
Yeah, they certainly do. Yeah. Although, Rafa, they did beat Dortmund 5-1 last time they met.
They did, and that was, of course, in Munich, and Thomas Tuchel and his side were really tactically outthought that night. But you sense that it might not happen again. At the same time, you know, losing at home to Mainz is probably not the worst sort of preparation, even though it sounds sort of counterintuitive, because Bayern, I think, will be even more determined to put it right. And in reality, in all likelihood, a draw would probably be a reasonable result for them. So the pressure, if you want to put it in those terms, is still very much in Dortmund. And they themselves will probably say, you know, well, there isn't much pressure because we know all along that Bayern are favourites. If we can make it exciting and tight again, that'd be great. If not, we're heading for the Champions League and we've got other fish to fry. So it should really all make for a very, very spectacular event on Saturday.
Rafa, do you think Pep may have been more concerned by Manchester City's defeat at the hands of Liverpool than he was by Bayern Munich's at the hands of Mainz?
Well, I didn't see him watch the game on an iPad or portable device while he was losing with Mainz. And my sense is that, to be slightly more serious, that he's not really that concerned with City at the moment. He's still got really big job to do with Bayern, to become the first team ever to win 4 titles in the Bundesliga in a row, to win, of course, the Champions League that the club and he himself so covet. And I think in a funny way, Pellegrini having a bad end of the season actually helps him a little bit, because remember only a couple of months ago everyone said, well, you know, he's taken the easy way out, he's taken over the best team, why is he not having a challenge, etc. Well, you know, he might actually come into a big challenge, which is to take a team that finished only 4th or maybe in Europa League and make them champions. So I think in a strange way it actually makes his position or his job a little bit easier if City are having a poor end to their season.
All right, then. Now, Mainz, as a result of that victory, moved even more strongly into contention for a Champions League place themselves. They are 3 points, I think, behind... well, they're level with Mönchengladbach and 3 points behind another big surprise, which is Hertha Berlin, who won again. Solomon Kalou, I think he scored as well, didn't he? Quite remarkable stuff there. But what I actually wanted to ask you about, Rafa, just before we let you go, was Borussia. You mentioned big game coming up for Bayern as they take on Juventus. What about Borussia's chances next Thursday when they take on Spurs in the Europa League?
Well, I think that game has really started to play on their minds. It's probably the worst tie they could have had. I think they're really excited. They've never played Spurs. You know, this team loves going away on big European nights. They see themselves as within a realistic chance of winning the Europa League, and they've been taking it seriously all along from when they started back in the qualifiers in July, almost all the time feeling their best side. So it is a huge game for them. You know, the fact that they are now in with a chance to make this a title race possibly makes it a slightly smaller game. But if Bayern win or draw, then the Europa League, I think, once again, will actually become their key focus, because qualification for the Champions League domestically is all but guaranteed. So either way, it's going to be a super exciting game. I think one of the games that everybody in Europe looks forward to. And Dortmund, I think, will be very, very tough opponents for Spurs.
It's going to be a tough decision what to watch, although they stagger the games, don't they, in the Europa League? Because you've also got, among the many other huge fixtures, Man United, Liverpool.
Yeah, at Anfield, two teams meet together in Europe for the first time in the history, and it just seems...
You're kidding, they never... Really? Is this the first ever European clash between them?
Yeah. Wow. They never met before in Europe.
No. I suppose that's not that.
They almost did. They almost did. Same year they got to the final against Chelsea in the Champions League. They almost met. Well, they were, you know, they were drawn. Anyway, that doesn't matter.
But anyway, this is the first time.
Yes. And I'm guessing it's the biggest shot in the arm to the Europa League in England since it's, you know, kind of been put aside like a European League Cup for so many years. So it's going to be huge interest in it and very intriguing because Liverpool haven't beaten Louis van Gaal's Manchester United. They've been beaten by them over and over again, which is odd when you consider that how people think about Manchester United's kind of dropping off in terms of quality under van Gaal. So, yeah, it'll be very interesting, great atmosphere, and I know United are trying to move the second leg from the 6 p.m. kickoff time to a later time at Old Trafford, which makes perfect sense because I just think that could be a bit of a disaster starting so early on a Thursday.
Right.
All the traffic and fans, you know, going across. Network Rail will be absolutely chocker that night.
Wow. All right. Thursday, what a day that's set to be. Now, this is in no way an anticlimax, John. Talk to us about the Championship. And I say that in all seriousness because it's ever so tight. Look at that. 2 points separating the top four. Burnley, a point ahead of Hull and Borough, and then only a point further behind Brighton.
Yeah, well, Borough had the chance to go top in midweek while everybody else was playing, but they managed to lose 2-1 at Blackburn, rather surprisingly. So yeah, all this weekend's fixtures are weirdly staggered. So there's a game tonight. I think Hull play Birmingham on Thursday evening. Then on Friday there's Borough who play Wolves, and then also Hull miss out on a round of midweek fixtures next week. So by the time they play again, they could be sort of well be playing catch up thanks to their FA Cup replay against Arsenal. And the other midweek fixture was Brighton and Leeds.
Right.
Where Brighton 4-0 up at half time.
Really? What was so bad about it, Ben?
Just Leeds, the hammering they got.
Four goals he conceded in 20 minutes, wasn't it, John?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Very sorry for Steve Evans.
Really? Did you just say. right. Sorry, he was told not to speak to the media after the match by Massimo Cellino.
Okay.
Who himself left the ground at half time, is that right?
Yeah. He'd seen enough.
And he then said after the game that he's not going to sack Steve Evans. So I'm sure Steve Evans is feeling really confident about that.
Yeah, no, they're in a bit of a mess. I think they've won once since Christmas as well, which obviously isn't helping things. I mean, if you've got a nightmare off the field, but you're top of the league, then things, you know, don't seem so bad. But they're tumbling. I don't think they're going to go down. They've got a 9-point buffer to the relegation zone, so they'll be fine.
Burnley, though, their top scorers, Sean Dyche is still, you know, playing Burnley football.
Yeah.
So trying to remember what Burnley played last year. They played decent football, didn't they? 4-4-2 and all that.
Yeah, they've been brilliant. Yeah. There's a big East Lancashire derby, actually, at the weekend. They face Blackburn, who they've not beaten at home since 1978. So that's a, you know, form goes out the window, etc.
If Burnley do go up, would it be the same as last time, that they wouldn't actually sign anybody so that when they go back down again, they're not too disrupted?
You'd imagine there'd be an element of that, yeah. I don't think they're going to, you know, suddenly be a big spending side.
What did they do the money last time? Did they build a new training ground?
Well, it's more to kind of like keep themselves going in perpetuity, isn't it, as well?
Right.
Like, sort of looking after, saving up for a rainy day ahead.
And, of course, Joey Barton's been particularly influential, it seems, for Burnley this year. Yeah. So maybe he's calmed down and become an assured presence.
Signing players. That's a big signing. Anyway,
it's good to mention Joe Barton on today, which is World Book Day.
Yeah.
He's given his views about England's autobiographies.
And he's got his own book that
is on the way.
Is on the way.
All written by Mike Calvin. Should be good.
Certainly should. That's a Championship several minutes.
Oh, we probably should mention Bolton.
Run out of time, John.
No, come on. All
right, okay, let's have a Bolton minute.
It could be the last chance
really?
To mention Bolton if they go to the wall next week.
Oh, no way.
Their takeover hasn't gone through yet. Oh. The league is still waiting for sort of assurances about their cash flow for next season if they get relegated. And the reports this week saying they don't have any relegation release clauses and wage reduction clauses in any of their huge contracts with players.
Wow.
For if they do go down. They face Leeds actually the weekend in a
battle of
crisis clubs. But basically, they need league ratification before the latest High Court appearance, which is on Monday, I think.
Wow. Oh, wow. Okay. Well, best fingers crossed for them. Excellent. I'll just finish off with a quick Coppa Italia minute. Or a quick Italian minute. Yes, Ben, I'm going to. It's really just quickly to say.
A minuto.
Un minuto. Yeah. Or uno, in fact. That was. Yeah. Anyway, right. First of all, big game on Friday. Roma and Fiorentina clashing at Stadio Olimpico. Why is this exciting? Well, apart from the fact that Roma are on a charge, having won six games in a row, they are level with Fiorentina. They're third, Fiorentina behind on goal difference, and it's a battle for the Champions League places, and it should be a cracker. Midweek, there was Coppa Italia action. Juventus, who'd soundly thrashed Inter 3-0 in the first leg, then lost 3-0 to them in the second leg midweek, and it went to penalties. Juve still went through, but still very unexpected from Inter. In the other game, Milan, rather unsportingly, did third division Alessandria 5-0, I think it finished. But anyway, they put loads of goals past them. So it's going to be a Juve-Milan final of the Coppa Italia, which will do. That's another competition that always needs a bit of a boost. A Juve-Milan final. Wow. That certainly will be it, because Milan have been on a bit of a run under Sinisa Mihailovic of late. Good. Well, Barry, that brings us to the end of today's exciting podcast. Anything you want to say to the listeners as they head out the door?
No, not really.
No?
Have a safe journey out the
door. Yeah, have a great weekend. All right, well, thanks for being with us. Greg, any message, any parting?
Enjoy your bath, John.
Right, there you go. That's nice. Not that John.
No,
John, anything?
I haven't got a bath.
Right.
I just like to wish everyone well, really.
Enjoy your shower.
I've confused now. What's all this?
I have no idea.
Well, I presume there's a friend of his who says something about he listens in the bath, does he?
Does he?
Yes, he does.
Yeah, careful with those earbuds or something, or the electronic device, because it could be catastrophic. I'd hate to be responsible for that in any way.
I hope he doesn't make toast in the bath too.
Yeah, I can't see why he'd try that, to be fair. Don't try watching Jimbo Vision in the bath either. But if you do want to know what I thought about Grimsby, or maybe in a day or two, Bone Tomahawk, the exciting cowboy-cannibal crossover, then you can do that. But, you know, make sure you're safely away from...
But if you've got a radio with batteries in it,
yeah,
then you feel free to listen to TalkSport while in the bath on Sunday morning between 11 and 1.
Are you saying that if a radio with batteries in it falls into the bath, that it's not going to... It might damage the radio, but not you?
I reckon you'd be all right.
It'd be just a low, mild tingle.
I don't anybody try it, just in case, but I think you'd be okay.
Yeah?
But I'm pretty sure that happened to me when I was a kid, that a radio with a battery...
Because I have a
bath,
someone bought me for a Christmas present, a shower radio.
Yeah. Oh, right, but I suspect that's a waterproof affair. Yeah. I would imagine.
Someone try it.
Let us know.
It's probably the same. You know that original sauce? Is it original sauce? That minty shower gel that makes you tingle? Yeah, I bet it'd be a bit like that. Same sort of experience.
It's not altogether unpleasant.
That's like a Japanese bath, then. You know, in the Japanese baths. Have you ever been into them? James,
which Japanese bath?
You know, in Japan, this thing, lots of Japanese men go to these public baths after work, and one of the baths is an electric bath.
Electric bath,
yeah, and that does give you a tingle when you're in it, like a serious tingle. Like I put a leg in it, and I was like, I'm not getting in that.
Really?
Jeez, yeah,
they run a mild electric current through the water.
Apparently, it's good for your heart rate or something. I don't know what it does, but anyway, yeah.
Wow, the Japanese, eh? They're so far ahead. Their toilets as well. Very modern.
Mm.
Very modern. Now, that really is it then, listeners. Thank you so much for staying with us throughout all this. We'll be back on Monday. Bye-bye for now.
Well, these guys have been plugging their own stuff for long enough, so it's only right that I get the chance to tell you that I have just released a new episode of my Podcast Master audio series. It's all about the changes in the podosphere in the first few months of 2016. There are also loads of new listening recommendations in there too. Head to iTunes or Acast, search for Podcast Master, and check it out.